Get your ass up. This the Queen Quimo podcast. Get your ass up. This the Queen Quimo podcast. Get your ass up. This the Queen Quimo podcast. Look, 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 look. This the Queen Quimo podcast. Better get in tune when she broadcasts. Small feet. Better pay attention when she broadcasts. All facts. Might learn something with your dog ass. Get yourself checked on a Sunday. Just might get you right on a Monday. Aim high. Why? You can make it big someday. Cause when I say aim, I ain't talking about the gunplay. Even though we straight from the hood with it. Any topic we could talk was good with it. Yeah. Near what we putting on. You an artist in your song. Think your track hot, we gon' see when she put it on. They either gon' vibe or they gon' leave when she put it on. That's G, get to know about Queen. No subject, look, she just might open up. Not play this and freestyle when she open up. No play thing on the low, she be going nuts. Got the city going up. This the type of show you listen to when you're rolling up or chilling at the crib with your fam and y'all pulling up. Get some knowledge and a laugh on this podcast. Queen representing for the people on this podcast. Get some knowledge and a laugh on this podcast. Queen representing for the people on this podcast. It's the Queen Quimo podcast. Get your ass up. It's the Queen Quimo podcast. Look, get your ass up. It's the Queen Quimo podcast. Look, get your ass up. Nigga. Fat.
Hello, everybody. Thank you for listening to the Queen Quimo podcast. Y'all, I was so damn excited about this interview. I had the honor and pleasure of speaking with the legendary Jane Elliott. If you don't know who Jane Elliott is, y'all need to go ahead and do a Google search on her right now. Search the Blue Eye Brown Eye Exercise. Learn a lot about who she is, what she stands for, her activism, her levels of education. Very, very thorough 100 motherfucker. I fucks with her. I fucks with Miss Jane Elliott. She from the old school. I didn't feel like I should be interrupting her or trying to have no debate with her or none of that goofy stuff. Like, she's legendary. This was just an opportunity for the listeners to get a chance to know who she is, what she stood for, what she represent, and why she goes hard the way that she do. So shout out to Miss Jane Elliott. She's a phenomenal lady. She was cool on the interview and off the interview. I had an opportunity to just really rap and touch base with her. She was very pure, genuine soul, and I'm very happy that I had the pleasure of talking with her. So y'all tune into this episode. Y'all take a good listen, and after this, do your homework as to who she is and some of the things that she talked about.
I want every white person in this room who would be happy to be treated as this society in general treats our citizens, our black citizens. If you, as a white person, would be happy to receive the same treatment that our black citizens do in this society, please stand. You didn't understand the directions. If you white folks want to be treated the way blacks are in this society, stand. Nobody's standing here. That says very plainly that you know what's happening. You know you don't want it for you. I want to know why you're so willing to accept it or to allow it to happen for others.
Hello, everybody. Thank you for tuning in to the Queen Quimo podcast. I got a special guest, very legendary, very like inspirational, activist, educator. We got Jane Elliott. How you doing, Miss Jane?
Well, I'm doing just fine after that introduction. I'm ready to hang up because I can't live up to it, but I'll try.
I'm sure you can. So can you tell the audience a little bit about who you are and just what it is that you do?
Oh, I'm an old white woman who was born on a farm in Northeast Iowa. I was raised in poverty, financial poverty, but moral greatness, moral abundance. My father would never tell a lie and wouldn't put up with anyone who did. And as I grew up, I realized, as I grew up, I grew older in Riceville, I grew up when I left there, but I realized that the great lie that we are told in this country is the lie of several different races. Okay. There's only one race, the human race, and that is the most important thing I learned from my father.
Right. And so because your father taught you that, like, you've been like a human rights activist pretty much about 50, 60 years?
Well, 51 years. 51 years, actually.
Okay.
My whole life, in fact.
Right. Yeah. So I know a lot of people may know you from doing the blue eye, brown eye experiment. Can you tell the audience?
Now, wait a minute. Wait. Don't go any farther with that. I don't do experiments with people.
That's right. Experience.
If when I do this exercise and I create a microcosm of society in a classroom or a boardroom or a huge room of 1,800 people, that's not an experiment.
Right.
If it is, then what we have been doing with skin color in this country for the last 300 years is an experiment. And it ought to be stopped. It's unethical. It's illegal. It's immoral to experiment with other people without their knowledge or without their permission. What I do is not an experiment.
Right.
What we do in this country, we need to stop it. It's an exercise. It's an educational exercise to help my students understand that they need to empathize with those who are different from themselves, because the main difference, which is skin color, is totally irrelevant.
Right. So, can you explain, like, kind of what the exercise consists of?
Yeah, what I do is I separate people according to the color of their eyes.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't invent this. I learned it from Adolf Hitler. One of the ways they decided who went into the gas chamber was eye color. So I separate students according to the color of their eyes, and I discriminate against those who have the wrong color eyes for the day. The next day, I reverse the exercise. Now, when I do it in a small group for 3 hours, I don't reverse the exercise. Because if you do, that turns it into a game. Racism is not a game. Racism is ugliness and ignorance in action. And we need to realize that, and we need to put a stop to it. I separate them, and then for an hour and a half or 2 hours, for adults in a workshop setting, we discriminate against the people who have the wrong color eyes, and the blue-eyed people are always on the bottom because they have been on the top unfairly and lived away happily for the last 200-300 years. So the brown-eyed people are always on the top, and then we allow blue-eyed people to find out how it feels to be treated unfairly on the basis of a physical characteristic over which they have absolutely no control.
Right.
When the exercise is over, we get back together and we debrief what has just happened. And the learning that takes place during that debriefing is absolutely astounding, because people say things like, I'll never forget, but many white women who have turned to the black woman beside them and said, this was too difficult, this was too extreme, it isn't like this every day. And this woman, the black woman, says, I live with this every day.
Right.
What about us? And that white woman will say, that's different. You're used to it. You can take it. I hear that over and over and over again.
Yeah.
That I heard that first time in 1968 in Toronto, Canada, when I did exercise on a television show in Toronto. And a white woman stood up, first person to stand up, said, how can you do that to those little white children? Don't you think you could dramatic negative behavior to them, negative? They could feel bad about that for the rest of their lives. And I said, if you worry about those little blue-eyed children, white children having that for a day, you must be absolutely infuriated by what happens to First Nations people in your country and mine for a lifetime. And she said, that's different. They're used to it. They can take it. That's the first time I heard it, and I've heard it over and over and over since then.
Right. And I hear that a lot, too. Like, and I personally, I was really like, when I watched the exercise, because I watched you do it with the children, and I heard you say that what kind of inspired the experience was the death of Dr. King.
Well, it wasn't his death. It was the killing of Dr. King. If
right.
he had died a natural death, that would have been different.
Right.
But we tried to kill that dream, and Victor Hugo said, no power on earth can stop a man with a dream or an idea whose time has come.
Right.
Martin Luther King Jr.'s dream is more alive now than it was when he was living. And the idea of one race is an idea whose time has come, and no power on earth is going to be able to stop it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I seen you do it then, and it was nice to see the reaction from the kids. But then I saw you again do it on the Oprah show, and that one was a little bit more intense because I seen, like you said, the people in the audience, like who were part of the experience, they got up and they were kind of like outraged with you. They became more violent.
It's always interesting when you do it with adults. Mm-hmm. I've been hit by a white male during this exercise. I've had a knife pulled on me. They took me out of Uniontown, Pennsylvania at midnight. Three carloads of black people did because the teachers that I had put through the exercise in a very informal way in the morning had called the superintendent and said, if you don't get that bitch out of town, we're going to shoot her. So they got me out of town. They took care of me until I finished my work the next morning, next afternoon. And then they got me out of town just as fast as they could go.
Wow.
Because they were afraid that I was going to get killed right then and there because I put adult white people, blue-eyed white people, through an exercise that allowed them to feel the way black people feel for a lifetime. And they were infuriated. And they've done studies that prove that the longer you stay in school, the more bigoted you become, because the longer you are reinforced in what you learned in kindergarten and first to 12th grade.
Right, and I want to ask you.
Teaching in the school is racism, blatant racism. As long as you're still teaching that Columbus discovered America, you're teaching racism. It's time for us to put a stop to it.
Right, and I want to ask you about that because I remember on one of the videos that I watched about you, you said that racism and bigotry is not you're not born with it; you're taught it. And so
that's a learned response. You aren't born a bigot. Nobody's born a bigot.
Right.
You may be born with an affinity for people who look like you, but you have to be taught to dislike those who are different.
Mm-hmm. And so
and we do it. We teach that. We are very good at teaching that. We teach that only white males discovered and wrote and sang and did all these wonderful things. All these things were done by white males. We absolutely refuse to admit that we all started 300,000 to 500,000 years ago near the equator, and those people were black because their bodies produced a lot of melanin to protect themselves from the rays of the sun. As they moved farther from the equator, the farther they got from the equator, the less melanin their bodies produced, and the lighter their skin got. It has nothing to do with being God's chosen children. It has to do with your body's reaction to the natural environment. People forget, they don't forget. We've never been taught how intelligent, how courageous, how curious, how brilliant those first black human beings were. They managed to populate every landmass on the face of the earth.
Mm-hmm.
And the only reason there are people with lighter skin is because they moved away from the equator. Your body responds to the natural environment and changes in reaction to the natural environment over time. That's the only reason there are white people on this earth, and there are no white people. You cannot find a single person whose skin matches a piece of typing paper.
Right.
It's impossible. It simply isn't possible. So no matter how often you use the word white, because it means purity, and that's the reason they chose to make those people, the people with power, white, the only reason they chose that was to put themselves above a whole bunch of other people and to allow them to have give them a justification for killing those who are people of other color groups.
Mm-hmm. And so you just said something. You said that skin color is a response to the natural environment. Can you give an example of how so?
Of what?
You said that skin color is a response to the natural environment. So can you give different examples of how the environment can change your skin color?
Oh, your environment can change your skin color. White people depend on it in the summertime. You go out and sit in the sun long enough, your skin gets tanned, but as you come back in and they're not exposed to the sunlight anymore, you lose your tan.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yes, exactly. And if you over thousands of years, if you live in a very, very warm environment where there's lots of sunlight, your skin, your body will produce enough melanin to protect yourselves from the rays of the sun.
Mm-hmm.
People have no choice but to have that happen, but it takes thousands of years. Now somebody's going to call in and say, well, I sit out in the summertime, but my body changes color in the wintertime. Well, because it's not exposed to that much sunlight, and it isn't a permanent difference if you don't expose yourself to that amount of sun all day, every day. However, white women need to be, white people generally, need to be very, very careful about that, because the rays of the sun are getting stronger and stronger as a result of the destruction of the ozone layer.
Mm-hmm.
And as that happens, we're exposed to more and more sunlight, and more people with light skin are getting melanoma, which is a cancer that you get from having too little melanin in your skin.
Right.
To protect themselves from the rays of the sun. These people who are lying in those tanning beds are asking for trouble. I have a daughter-in-law who has a whole lot of melanoma because she has spent years staying beautifully tanned because of her tanning bed. She's in trouble. She's in a lot of trouble.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's what I wanted to get to, too, because, like, even not just the sunlight, I saw that you mentioned something about some orange juice, how the kids were drinking orange juice and their body began to change.
Yeah, my husband ran a produce department in a national tea grocery store for a number of years. And when the oranges got old, he'd bring them home. We'd squeeze them, pour them into the kids, and they drank orange juice by the quart, literally.
Mm-hmm.
And they began to turn a strange yellow color. So I took them to the doctor. I said, "What's going on here?" I thought they were jaundiced. And she said, "What are they eating?" And I said, "Well, just normal food, lots of orange juice." She said, "Lots of orange juice? That's what's happening with their skin. Stop giving them so much orange juice and their skin will turn back." I stopped giving them so much orange juice and their skin turned back since their regular color.
Oh, wow. Yeah, I thought that was fascinating, but it made so much sense.
I thought orange juice was good for you. Well, it is good for you if you don't mind being yellow.
Right. Yeah, like that's what I'm saying. Like, it's so many different things, like, that can factor into skin color and your pigment. And I had no idea until that point when I saw you say that about the orange juice. I said, that do make sense. It just makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, it does make sense. Your body adjusts to what you put into it or where you put it. There's a woman who's doing TED Talks who talks about the fact that people in the Far East have different eyes and different skin color because the sun's rays hit the earth at a different angle.
Right.
Which never occurred to me, but now I've got to look up her name and find out everything she knows about that, because it makes good sense. Absolutely. Your body adjusts to the natural environment, and you can't stop the adjustment unless you move out of that environment.
Right. Yeah, that makes sense. So now I got some more questions for you. So you say you've been basically a human activist your whole life, but, like, heavily 51 years. What motivates you to, like, continue to combat racism every day? Like, what motivates you to do this?
I'm an educator. And the word educator comes from the root deus, which means lead, the prefix e, which means out, the suffix ate, which means the act of, and the suffix or, which means one who does.
Mm-hmm.
An educator is one who is engaged in leading people out of ignorance. And the ignorance of racism is the number one ignorance that is destroying this country today. We are allowing an ignorant person to appeal to a whole lot of ignorance in other people to lead them to dislike those who are different from themselves.
Right.
And as a result, we are right now in danger of losing our democracy. I'm watching this happen on television all day, every day. This person is trying to deconstruct this government.
Mm-hmm.
People need to know that. Steve Bannon, I watched an interview in which Steve Bannon said to the interviewer, "Trump has to deconstruct this government." Now, deconstructing this government means we will no longer have a democracy.
Okay.
And I don't think people are going to enjoy not having a democracy, but they don't realize how lucky they are to have this one. And I'm really concerned that if people don't wake up and if we don't get educators, we've got to educate the educators first. We've got to educate these educators to realize that you must not support the myth of white superiority and the myth of four or five different races. Every person listening to this podcast should read the book The Myth of Race by Robert Wald Sussman.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody should read that book so that you will realize how you are being grossly misled. And the second book everybody should read is Nile Valley Contributions to Civilization.
Okay.
By Anthony Browder. It's an absolute must read, particularly for educators, because once you get educated to the fact that there's only one race, you'll be amazed at how much money you save and how little energy you have to use in order to support the truth instead of trying to support the myth.
Yeah. And speaking of supporting the men, so like, even with what you're saying, like without having a democracy, do you feel like politics like plays hand in hand with racism though?
It has, and it will.
Yeah.
Right now, I just heard just a moment of what they're trying to do. They're bringing people out of prison. They're releasing people from prison. They're sending them to work in Africa. They've got some skills they learned in prison about how to destroy people, and then they're bringing them back here and teaching them to use those skills here on people who are different from themselves. They're going to change. We are going to change this democracy by using the power that people have as a result of being imprisoned and being taught the ugliness of white people. The whole thing is so disgusting.
Yeah.
People don't seem to, they don't want, well, white people are afraid because they know that within 30 years, white people will have become a numerical minority in the United States of America. And that's the reason for the absolute determination on the part of the person in the White House to build a wall between on the southern border of the United States, because he has been told that people of color, brown-skinned people, reproduce too rapidly. And he has said that several times. We've got to keep those brown-skinned people out of here because they reproduce too rapidly.
Mm-hmm.
What kind of insanity is this?
Right.
It is the insanity of ignorance, of believing that skin color is an indicator of your worth as a human being, and it is not.
Right. Well, so I got a question even about that. So, like, with that being said that we reproduce so rapidly, what was the whole reasoning behind getting rid of parenthood and this legalization?
Of course it is. This is exactly what the idea, what the reason for getting rid of Planned Parenthood is.
Mm-hmm.
In 1987, when a man named, wrote the book The Birth Dearth, Ben Wattenberg wrote the book The Birth Dearth.
Okay.
He was an advisor to presidents of the United States, and he said in his book, the main problem confronting the United States today is there are not enough white babies being born in this country.
Right.
If we don't do something about this and do it rapidly, this country will no longer be a white man's land. He said there are three things we can do to change this situation. Number one, we can pay women to have babies as they've been doing in Western European nations for years. Then he says, and these are his words, not mine.
Mm-hmm.
Unfortunately, we would have to pay women of all colors to have babies, so we don't want to do that. He says the second thing we could do is increase the number of legal immigrants coming into this country every year. Unfortunately, the majority of those wanting to come to this country every year are people of color, so we don't want to do that. Now, that's what he says in the book, the first book that he wrote in 1987.
Mm-hmm.
He says the third thing we could do is remember that 60% of the fetuses that are aborted in this country are white. If we could get, we could lower that, we could shorten the time at which we will become a minority. Now, anybody who thinks that the attempt to do away with Roe versus Wade is about religion is wrong. That's not what it's about,
mm-hmm.
unless your religion is white. And if you believe that whiteness and rightness, because they rhyme, are equals, you need to realize that what you are being told to do is keep babies alive, white babies alive, so that we will increase the number of white people in this country. This is un-American. This is undemocratic. This is immoral. You need to realize that. Now, I gave a speech at a college not too long ago, and there were two little boys wearing those red caps that say, in fact, make America hate again. It says make America great again, but it means make America hate again,
because mm-hmm.
you want to take us back to the 50s, which was really good for white males, but not worth a damn for the rest of us.
Mm-hmm.
And one of them raised his hand and said, Miss Elliott, I want to talk to you. I said, I'll talk to you after I get done here. So we went downstairs later, and I said, no. He said, you said 60% of the fetuses that are aborted are white. You've got your statistics wrong. I said, well, what statistics do you have? He said, today's statistics are 39% of the fetuses that are aborted are white. 61% are other fetuses of other colors. I said, you just made my point. He said, what do you mean? I mean, it was 60% in 1987. It's now down to 39%. Would you say that we are succeeding in keeping white fetuses alive? He looked at me, and he had the strangest look on his face. He said, I never thought of it that way. I said, of course you didn't think of it that way, because you weren't thinking.
Yeah.
Go over what you just learned. And we went over it, and he stayed and stayed and stayed. And I finally said, go talk to her, to the person who hired me, so that I can somebody else's questions. He was, and his brother was with him, and he said to him, she's right, you know. And he was just gobsmacked by that simple fact. He couldn't understand that he had just told me, by golly, Ms. Elliott, you were right about that.
Right.
We were being successful. People have to look. It's like the screen is up. Look behind the screen, and you're going to see what's really going on.
Right. And I think, like, for our generation, like, I'm 29, so, like, me and the people up under me, we don't have a lot of educators telling us about the things before us. And if we do, it's been a lie. So do you feel like...
And you aren't encouraged to take a book instead of turning on television or picking up a phone by it.
Who, me? Yes.
People have to take a book. People have to turn off their televisions, throw their cell phones or whatever it is that you're using
right
under the bed and read a book.
Right. I agree with you.
Or if you have to have a Kindle, if you have to have a screen to look at, then get a Kindle and read a book on Kindle.
Yeah.
But there are hundreds of books out there that will tell you the truth.
Right.
We stay away from them. And in fact, when I go to a major bookstore, I walk down the aisles just out of curiosity. And then the books where there are lots of romantic fiction kinds of things, you know?
Yeah.
All the covers are shown on the front cover, shown on the white romance novels.
Uh-huh.
The black romance novels, you see nothing but the spine of the book. And it's just so funny. I think people... Get real. It is so pathetically ignorant.
Yeah.
That you think if you show those two black people in a romantic situation, you are encouraging something.
Right.
It's all right to show white people like that. It is those petty little ignorant little things that keep us thinking in really foolish ways.
Yeah.
People need to be aware of what's happening. When you look for a black history book, you have to look in the black section. It's real history.
Exactly.
The white section. You have to go to the black history section. Wait a minute.
I mean, but black even like...
Black history is longer. It goes back farther than white history does.
And see, that's the thing. Like, even like as you're trying to acquire more knowledge, it's not... Unless you find an elder that'll kind of give you a guide as to what you should look up to, you really could still fall into false information. Because I know a lot of people are hungry for knowing the truth and hungry for making change, but, like, we looking in the wrong direction, you know?
That's right. And it's out there, but we don't want you to know the truth. In this country, what we call education is really indoctrination.
Yeah.
It used to take us from the age of 5 to the age of 18 to indoctrinate a student to be a really good American citizen.
Right.
Now, one president said, give me a child from the ages of 2 to 3 and you'll be mine for a lifetime. And that's when we started early childhood ed. So now it takes us from the age of 3 to the age of 18 to get a really determined American citizen who
right.
believes in the myth of white male superiority.
Right.
And you look at this last election and you have to say, oops, education failed here. It didn't work.
Right. And speaking of education, like, as an educator, how do you feel about the school systems now, the curriculum that they've been teaching the kids? Do you feel like it's getting better or it's getting worse?
No, it's getting worse. I'm sorry, but it's getting worse.
Right.
Because we are trying to perpetuate the myth of white male superiority, number one. And number two, you need to realize that children could learn reading, writing, and arithmetic with a computer. Many of them do.
Right.
Instead of teaching the three R's then of reading, writing, and arithmetic, put them on a computer, but then for the rest of the day, teach them the three R's of reason, rights, and responsibility.
Mm-hmm.
You can't learn those off a computer, but you can learn those in associations with other human beings. And I mean other human beings of all kinds and all colors.
Right.
We need to start teaching reason, rights, and responsibility in the schools. And we need to start today.
Yeah.
We need to teach children that you do not violate another person's rights. You need to teach children the reason why you are in school, the reason why you need this indoctrination, which we are now going to turn into education,
mm-hmm.
and your responsibility for what you think, what you say, and what you do, so that you will never grow up to be a person who just grows older instead of growing up, and who absolutely denies any responsibility for any of the ugly things that they say or do or feel.
Yeah.
We've got start teaching reason, rights, and responsibility. And it can be done. And we've got to start teaching children empathy. We've got to teach children to empathize with other people, to think about what their action, what reaction or what effect their action is going to have on another human being. We have to teach that kind of responsibility, and we have to do it now. And I wish we could make it retroactive.
Right.
Because we've got some adults running this country who need to know something about empathy.
And I agree with that.
Something about empathy or anything else that's important.
I agree with that, because it's like nowadays, you know, people, they call themselves trying to be empathetic, and they'll say something like, oh, I don't see color. Oh, I, you know, you're my friend for you, and this and this and that. And like, even that, like when people say that they don't see color, like you said something that really stuck out to me, because I've always felt this way. Like, why is it wrong to see color? It's okay to see.
Women say to me once, every woman has a chance to say that to me once. Women will say to me, I'm colorblind, I don't see color. And I say, I knew that before you said that. Because if you saw color, you wouldn't wear that shirt with those pants. And then they get all upset. They say, Mom, you know what I mean? I say, I know exactly what you mean. You mean that you can't relate to someone whose color. And pretend that you don't see that disgusting problem. It's not a problem. You need to know that that's not the problem. The problem is your ignorance about skin color. Then she walks away rather quickly, and somebody says, well, you didn't do that very well. And I say, she didn't say I don't see color very well. You do not say to me that you don't see color. You do not say that to me, because, number one, you're lying, and everybody around you knows you're lying. I'll never forget the woman who stood up in a meeting, a large group meeting, and said, I just looked for the person's heart. And I said, if you can see my heart from where you're standing, you should go down to the local hospital and volunteer to be their x-ray machine, because you can save them a bunch of money. She said, you know what I mean. I said, I know exactly what you mean. You want to deny a person's skin color because it makes you uncomfortable. Mm-hmm. So you pretend that you see their heart. If you could see my heart, you would realize that it's very colorful.
Right, exactly.
I've dressed chickens. I know what color heart is. It ain't white. You need to know that white. Your heart isn't white.
Right.
Black people, your heart isn't black.
Nope.
Your hearts are all the same color. Get over it.
Mm-hmm.
The whole thing is so ridiculous. But eventually, you end up, at some of these meetings, I end up laughing my tail off, because how can they walk in there saying that they want to make a change and make these ignorant, totally ignorant and insensitive and untrue statements.
Right.
And expect me to accept them and smile and say, thank you for coming, and I'll take your check now. No, I'll take your check after I tell them how ignorant this statement just was.
Right. And I agree, like, because I think, like, that's what being taught, like, oh, you don't see color. But like you said, color is beautiful. Like, that's the reason why we all have different shades. It's okay to have different shades. And I don't want people to, like, ignore the fact that I am black. I don't want you to treat me different because I'm black. But I don't want you to ignore the fact that I have a darker skin pigment. Like, it's okay. It's okay.
You have the responsibility to say, when they say, when I see you, I don't see you black. You need to say, well, what color do you see me?
Exactly.
Do you see me green? Do you see me red? Do you see me orange? Well, no, you know what I mean. I know what you mean, and when I see you, I don't see you white. If it's a male, you say I see a big pink male. Then they won't call you black anymore. Yeah, you say that to a man, and they immediately get angry. They don't want to be called big pink males. Well, if you don't want to be called a big pink male,
and they probably turn pink.
I'm a little white woman. I'm a white woman.
Right. Right.
Let's be a little more careful with our vocabulary. We all have dictionaries that have lots and lots of words for skin color that aren't white. And if you want to get the cure, get the National Geographic magazine for April of 2018. It is absolutely priceless.
Okay.
On the cover of the magazine, you see twin girls. One is black and one is white, according to our vocabulary. And inside that magazine, there are about 60 or 70 people, about 70 people, on the color wheel. The color wheel is gives you it's people's skin tones. It's a standard color palette to show how arbitrary racial characteristics can be. There are people of all different colors on this page, and each of them has a number on the color wheel. It is just absolutely beautiful. Everybody has to read the National Geographic magazine for April of 2018. You send the request to the National Geographic magazine. It'll cost you $7. I sent for 10 because I give it away because I want everybody to see that magazine.
Yeah.
Everybody has to read that magazine so that the next time somebody says to you, "When I see you, I don't see you black," you say, "Oh, what you mean is you don't see me, number 432. Well, what do you mean? Well, that's my number on the color wheel. Didn't you know that? And your number is 1,519. Now, those are wrong numbers. Make no mistake about that. Those are the wrong numbers that you're going to see. But you look at that and you figure out what number everybody would be on the color wheel. And then when somebody says that to you, if you're black, you say, "Well, I'm a number 3221C. Well, you didn't know that, did you? And this is my friend, and he's 322C. And this old lady over here, she's 367C. What are you talking about? Well, that's my color on the color wheel. But you see, it doesn't say I'm black. It says I have a number on the color wheel.
Right. Yeah, I agree with you, though.
We could put people busy learning numbers instead of learning colors, skin colors.
Yeah.
Because there are at least, on this page, there are at least 70 different skin colors.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, I'm going to check that out.
See, there's a cure for the problem. What we're going through isn't stupid, because you can't fix stupid. What we're going through is self-imposed ignorance, because the knowledge is out there if we would take advantage of it.
Yeah.
What we're going through is the effort to educate people instead of indoctrinating them.
Right.
Instead of going along with this nonsense in order to keep things comfortable, we have to start saying, "You're wrong."
Yeah.
It's too bad that you feel that way, but let me give you a copy of the National Geographic magazine, and you take a look at this, and you see whether you think what you just said makes any sense.
Yeah.
It's up to those of us who know better to educate those who don't know better.
Right.
You can't fix stupid. You can fix ignorant with education.
Right.
But first you have to educate the educators.
Yeah.
And I know teachers who believe in the myth of race because it keeps them employed.
Yeah, I agree with you there.
We pay good money to teachers. We don't pay them enough. In some cases, we pay them way too much. But we pay teachers money to perpetuate the ignorance of racism.
Mm-hmm.
And the minute teachers stand up and say, "Look, I'm not going to teach this nonsense anymore from now on. This is the way I'm going to do this. I'm going to teach the truth," that person will probably lose his or her job.
Yeah.
Because we don't want to know the truth.
Yeah. I agree with you. I feel that way a little bit.
Into this too. It isn't just white people who are bought into this. Black people are bought into it, too. We've taught them what their place is, and it's easier to keep your place than it is to stand up and say, "I'm not going to believe this nonsense anymore."
Right.
When you tell me you don't see me black, you better be prepared to run.
Yeah.
Now I'll watch you run, and I'll say, "I see you running."
Now I got a question, and I agree with that 100%, because I feel like, you know, it is easier to keep yourself in the dark, but, you know, because once your eyes open and you know the truth, like, your life has to change. You're forced to change. You know, even if you try to stay the same, you just forced to take action, at least for some. You know, some people, they might have their eyes open and they don't want to take action. So with...
They don't have any choice now.
Yeah.
Because within 30 years, people of color will be running this situation.
Yeah.
They'll be running the country.
Yeah.
And you need to know that they can do it, and they need to know that they can do it, and they've got to start believing they can do it, and they've got to stop believing in the myth of white supremacy and superiority. We have a president now who proves without a shadow of a doubt that you can be really, really ignorant and be white.
Yep. So he's
doing us a big favor there.
Yeah.
Because he's disproving white superiority. He's disproving white male superiority. He's proving that he is not qualified to do the job he's supposed to be doing.
Yeah.
And so it proves to us all that, well, white males don't know everything. That's right. They don't, and they never have.
Right.
But we have been educated. We've been indoctrinated to the myth of white male superiority.
Yeah. Now,
it's a lie.
So, like, with us trying to combat this, do you have any books that you advise people to read? I know you mentioned The Birth Dearth and The Myth of The Myth of Race is the and the National Geographic.
Don't get The Birth Dearth that was written in 2000-something, because all that is a whole bunch of statistics, graphs, and tables and charts to prove what he's saying without actually saying it right up front, because he got all kinds of ugly responses to his first book, The Birth Dearth. So he has changed it. It's full of statistics. And Benjamin Disraeli said there are three kinds of lies: lies, damn lies, and statistics. And right. You can make statistics prove anything. So don't get the new edition of The Birth Dearth. See if you can get your hands on the 1987 edition of the book The Birth Dearth by Ben Wattenberg. Read that, and then you'll understand why the people and the Republicans in the Senate and the people, the man in the White House, are convinced that we have to increase the number of white babies being born in this country today. You'll understand it after you read that book. Everybody should read The Handmaid's Tale, because what we're going through right now is The Handmaid's Tale. And if you haven't read it, you need to read it. It will blow you away. And when you, if you can afford it, get a copy of the film The Eye of the Storm. Watch those kids, what they go through. And then go outside and look at what's going on in this country today. And it came to me a couple of months ago. Oh, my God. What we're doing in this country today is replicating the blue-eyed, brown-eyed exercise on the national level. We're picking out groups of people on the basis of physical characteristics over which they have no control. We're assigning negative traits to them. Mr. T has called them things like rapists and murderers and druggists and all these ugly things on the basis of the color of their skin.
Yeah.
That's exactly what I did with my students, but in a less vicious manner. We are replicating The Eye of the Storm nationally today, and people are going along with it because they don't recognize that what I did with my students, I replicated what the Nazis did with the Jews.
Yeah.
Starting in 1933. And here we are in 2019, and we are replicating at the national level what the Nazis did with the Jews. And nobody has the courage to stand up and say, this is Nazism.
Yeah.
We have a president who will say there are good people on both sides. There are good extreme racists. Come on, those aren't good people. I don't care how much time they spend in church, those aren't good people.
Period.
I don't care how much money they put into his campaign coffers, those aren't good people.
Right.
People who say you have the right to treat people positively or negatively on the basis of the color of their skin are not good people.
Yeah.
They are ignorant people who choose to remain ignorant because the information is out there. All you have to do is go after it.
Yeah.
But instead, we'll turn in, if this doesn't stop pretty soon, we'll be burning books. I'm warning you, we will be burning books when this fool realizes how powerful writing is. He will do exactly what the Nazis did. He will start burning books.
Yeah, I feel that. I do. Like, I don't know. I do feel like it's important to document and tell your own stories, because for so many years, like, we've let other people lie to us and tell us a version of their story. And I do feel like as a person who has, like, been trying to advocate, like, for equality for so long, I feel like we should, like, definitely write and tell our own stories and definitely read the stories before us, because, you know, how do we combat something if we haven't been educated? So I agree with you.
You must not let other people define you. You must tell your children, do not let some ignorant person of whatever color try to tell you that you are less than because of the color of your skin, which they don't understand at all. Mm-hmm. You must not let that happen. And when somebody starts doing it, you need to say, wait a minute. What I do with people in large groups now is say to the group, look, You are all descendants of the same ancestors back there 300,000, 500,000 years ago. Every person in this room is. That's where we all came from. Mm-hmm. Which means we are all 30th to 50th cousins. So now turn to the person on your right, stick out your hand and say hello, cousin, and smile when you do it. And a whole room full, 1,500 at the University of Houston, stuck out their hands and said hello, cousin, and then they started to visit about what they just learned. Good Lord. That's what we are. We are all members of the family of man. It says so in the Bible, and those Bible beaters need to remember that sentence and that verse in the Bible that says we are all members of the family of man. And that's only one family. And you not may not like me for your cousin, but you're stuck with me. Right. Because I have the same ancestors that you have.
Yeah. Yeah. You know what? Thank you for everything. Like, for joining me, for all of the gems you dropped today. I appreciate you so much. Like, this has helped me a lot today.
Wait a minute. Don't ever say that you appreciate a white woman who is doing what we should all be doing.
Okay.
My heroes are black women because they keep on keeping on no matter what this society does to them. You can't keep them down. So don't ever, and I say this to people of color all the time, do not thank me, a white woman, for doing what I have to do. This is something that I don't have a choice about.
Yeah.
If I'm going to be an educator, I have to tell the truth.
Yeah.
I cannot support racism and tell the truth. It won't work. I can either support racism or I can tell the truth. There's only one race, and you and I are cousins.
Yeah.
And that's the way it is. And I resent it when some of my lighter-skinned cousins show their ignorance by abusing or criticizing some of my colored citizens, of my cousins of other colors, because of my light cousins' ignorance about skin color.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
No, man, thanks. Like, even though you said this is something y'all supposed to do, you know, a lot of people don't. So I'm always appreciating somebody who's doing what they're supposed to do for other people. You know, I feel like it's so rare nowadays, you know, and I know it definitely had to be rare, like, in your day. Or was it?
My family lost their business. My parents lost their business. My husband lost all his friends because he couldn't control his wife. My kids lost all their friends. They were beaten and spit on and abused by their peers, by their teachers, and by the parents of their peers because they have what is called an N-word lover for a mother. And I said, fine, kids, I'd rather be a lover than a hater any day.
Yeah. Wow.
And that kind of shut that down because then it was a compliment to be called a lover. I appreciate that.
Mm-hmm.
My husband and I were good lovers. We had 4 children in 5 years, and we found out what was causing that. But nevertheless, being a lover is a good thing.
Yeah. So your kids now, like, how do they feel about all of the sacrifices you've made?
No, I don't. My kids made sacrifices. I didn't. Nobody abused me because they didn't dare.
Right.
But they abused my kids, and then I took them out of that school, so then that stopped there.
Right.
But the memory lingers on, and my kids will never forget what they did to them, and they'll never forgive the people who did it.
Yeah.
But on the other hand, people of color forgive white people all day, every day, and mm-hmm. I don't know how.
Yeah.
I don't know how they do it.
Yeah. Wow. Well, is there anything else you would like to enlighten us with today?
I didn't hear you.
I said, is there anything else you would like to enlighten us with today?
Well, I'm really not that.
Because I'm just
really
soaking it up.
I'm trying to weigh them down. I'm trying to teach them. You know, carrying the weight of whiteness and thinking it was brightness, but it's not. And if you get rid of that weight, then you really are enlightened, and you don't have to carry that burden anymore.
Yeah.
The burden of being the perfect person who looks like the baby Jesus when you're a baby. Well, you need to know that the baby Jesus didn't look like little Pillsbury Doughboy. According to the Bible, he had teeth, bronze, and kinky woolly hair. So that's another burden they need to give up.
Wow. I ain't know that one either.
Yeah, hopefully they are enlightened. I haven't made them any brighter, but I have let them be lighter if they realize that they can give up the burden of superiority because of the color of their skin, because it ain't working.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Well,
okay.
I appreciate you. I'm serious.
Now that you've lost all your listeners.
No, no, they're going
to.
No, I would love to call you again. Like, I would love to meet you in person, like, just to have a conversation.
Come to Osage, Iowa. Don't ask anybody in Osage where Jane Elliott lives, because they'll say, if you want to know where she lives, go to the sheriff's office. He'll tell you where she lives.
Okay.
We've had that experience several times.
Oh, my goodness.
It's funny after a while. They want to admit that they know where I live.
I definitely will come to Iowa and check you out. I will.
Come to Iowa and check me out, and I won't be in a mental institution if you come soon.
Oh, my goodness. Well, I'm coming soon.
There's no guarantees as I get older because people have called me crazy for years. But it's okay. It's okay. If it's crazy to believe that there's only one race on the face of the earth, and that's the human race, then I choose crazy.
I know that's right. Well, yep, I'm coming to Iowa. I'm going to choose crazy, too, and come check you out.
You come and see me, and we'll have a cup of tea together.
All right.
We'll enjoy a conversation about how we're going to change the world. And we can change the world.
Yeah, I'm definitely for that. That's my goal. I'm coming.
Make no mistake about that. One brown-skinned man called Jesus changed the world.
That's right. Man,
didn't have pale skin. He didn't have blue eyes. He didn't have blonde hair.
Shout out to you.
He was born in the Middle East, and he looked like a Middle Easterner, and he didn't look like a Norwegian.
Right. Y'all heard that? I didn't say it this time. Miss Elliott said it.
Yes, I did it, and I meant it. I mean it. At Christmas time this year, take all those little white dolls out of those mangers and put in a child who looks like Jesus looked.
Y'all hear that? Y'all hear dropping them gems? Y'all know what color Christ was. So let's go ahead and get over it.
I challenge everybody to do that. Yep. Because we need to change the perception of the person that we worship. To have it look like he looked instead of the way we want him to look.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yep.
I'll see you later in Iowa.
All right. Well, hold on a second. Don't hang up. Cut the mic off. What's up, y'all? This is your girl, Queen Quamo. I want to thank everybody for listening to my podcast. Also, I want you to check out my other show, Black Hair Care Matters. Black Hair Care Matters is an addition to the Queen Quamo podcast productions. It's embracing Black queens to love and take care of their natural hair. We will be discussing hair tips, our heritage, Black history facts, and just history in general. We'll talk about the struggles, the process, and the beauty products in all aspects associated with the feminine side of queens. So if this sounds like a show that you might be interested in, go ahead and check out Black Hair Care Matters. That's available on iTunes, Google Play Music, and Spotify.